Well, it's a busy week ahead, not just in Washington, but around the country. We're joined by Marcus Mabry, the Associate National Editor for our partner, The New York Times, this morning. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
Your word for the week is?
Omens.
Omens. Interesting. And Charlie Herman, economics editor for both The Takeaway and WNYC, your word?
Well, I don't speak Mandarin, but there's that character that means both crisis and opportunity, so that's why I see this week could be...
Which fits right in with omens.
It could go either way.
My generals are learning.
Good job.
Thank you.
Let's begin with China. And Hu Jintao, the Chinese president, is coming to Washington this week. He'll meet with President Obama on Wednesday at the White House. And Marcus, what exactly do you think is going to be on these two men's agenda?
Well, you know, going back to my word, omens here, I think we're going to get omens this week of kind of things to come. And I think this relationship is one of the most important in the world. I think we can't overemphasize the importance of both the Chinese-U.S. relationship and, for that reason, the Hu Jintao Barack Obama relationship. There are so many minefields in this relationship going forward as China, the fastest rising power in the world, now the second largest economy in the world, still dwarfed, you know, it's only a third the size of the U.S. economy, but is rising fast. And the reason that my 2 1-year-olds, have a nanny who speaks to them in Mandarin is because by the time they finish high school, perhaps by the time they get to high school, China will be the largest economy in the world, overtaking the U.S.
12-year-olds are studying Mandarin.
I think these omens tell us about, you know, it's about relative power, economic as well as military. As China continues to assert itself, we have a great piece on the front page of the paper today talking about how Hu Jintao is without a doubt the most complex and challenged Chinese leader of modern times. As China becomes a larger economy, there are more competing powers of sectors of power and interest in the country, so he can't rule it in a dictatorial way that his predecessors may have. That makes it a lot more complicated.
Yeah. And I just want to jump and talk, Marcus, talking about his two kids being 1 year old and how that could change in years from now. And I thought it was fascinating that in response to questions from the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, who in written answers basically said that the current international currency system is the product of the past. And basically the interpretation here is that the dollar-denominated currency that we have around the world, where you have oil traded in dollars, where really the dollar is the sort of standard unit of currency around the world, may be a thing of the past. And he goes on to talk about, you know, the development of the Chinese currency as an international currency, and really this idea that perhaps when Marcus's children are in their 20s and 30s, that would the yuan, the Chinese currency, become actually the global currency,
or some
new name altogether.
There's a tipping point out there, and that's what these two leaders are going to be discussing.
Exactly.
Somehow.
And it'll be interesting to watch this week, see how they play around that. Who is most polite, who is most gracious toward the other, and who actually becomes more aggressive and more challenging.
So much of this is about face and diplomacy, especially considering that when Hu came here about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there were just a lot of missteps with the Bush administration.
Yeah.
They said the wrong name for China. They called it basically Taiwan. And a protester stood up at one point. So there's a lot of face saving here.
One can only hope it goes a little better this time. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that China is neither our friend nor our enemy, which may make them our frenemy in some ways. But let's move on to banks, since we're talking about the economy, because the Financial Stability Oversight Council is going to meet tomorrow. Their purpose, their mission was to prevent financial collapse.
They've been created by the Dodd-Frank bill to basically identify threats to the financial system, to find ways to monitor and ensure financial stability. And what's interesting, again, this is this opportunity slash crisis, is this idea that the Treasury Secretary is the chairman of this new board, which is to identify what are those institutions that are systemically important that if they were to fail could cause a ripple effect like we saw 2 years ago. And yet, just last week, there was a report that came out from the Inspector General overseeing the TARP, the bailout program, looking into the bailout of Citi. And in that report, Geithner basically said, we won't be able to make a judgment about what's systemic. So basically, the man who is in charge of overseeing and coming up with rules for what is systemic basically saying, we kind of know systemic when we see it, but we can't really set up a rule in advance. So it sort of poses this question of, can the government actually ever create a system to be ready in case there's a big collapse like we saw with Citi, like we saw with Lehman Brothers, AIG? And he sounds like he's saying it's kind of hard to do that.
Although when this council was first created, there were still real serious fears of a double dip in the recession. And now the signs seem to be showing that very positively, no, a double dip is not on the horizon.
It doesn't look like it's on the horizon, but the idea is how do we create rules now when we've just come out of this crisis to prevent something like that from happening in the future? And so
right.
If one of the very people in charge of it is saying, well, it's kind of hard to do that, it creates this situation
Best guess. Is he afraid of going down this road? Is he like not competent to go down this road? Or does he just think the Treasury has no business here?
No, I think it's just a matter of it's really hard to predict where the next crisis is going to come and to come up with rules for it. And he basically said, if you create specific rules, then financial institutions will just try and go around those rules. So if you make it really clear.
But this question of systemic risk, you know, where do you plug up the holes that the risk in the system? The problem is it's such a vast system.
Yeah, and how do you know where the holes are?
Yeah. Exactly. This
way easier. It's a dam and there's one leak you can stick your thumb in, right?
And we're always fighting the last war, to mix our metaphors. But it's interesting to see because this week we'll also see reports, earnings reports from Goldman Sachs, from Citibank, from Bank of America. We're going to see how big these guys are getting. You know,
JP
just
Morgan.
And they're getting bigger.
JP Morgan announced a 47% increase in profit.
And the amount of money that they're holding is actually more than they were before the crisis. So this idea of preventing
too big to fail,
they're even bigger than they were before. We don't necessarily have rules. You have the Treasury Secretary acknowledging that it may be hard to actually come up with rules. So while we don't look like we're going into a double dip, the question is 20, 30, 40 years from now, do we end up where we are before? And does the government...
It's not about the double dip. It's about where's the next bubble.
That's right. It's about the structural problems. And don't forget what economy best survived, what large economy best survived the last trauma to the system. It was China's.
Well, let's move on real briefly from the economy and in our last remaining minute, talk about the former dictator Jean-Claude Duvalier, also known as Baby Doc. He has returned to Haiti. Marcus, I'm wondering, this makes me very nervous. I can't imagine how the Haitians feel. What does this mean?
You know, it's such a tumultuous situation there now. After the elections in November, which a recent report came out and said we're not independent and fair, after, you know, the cholera epidemic that's ongoing now, a year after the anniversary, a year after the horrible earthquake there, it could not be a more royal situation, and to toss in a former dictator does nothing to alleviate that problem.
Could be an omen, or if you're going to use Charlie's Mandarin character, it is both an opportunity in the midst of a crisis, right?
It's amazing to see how the Haitian people see it. I don't think they're going to agree to more.
Well, I'm just talking about he's maybe seeing an opportunity.
he
could be seeing his own opportunity, though. Marcus Mabry, Associate National Editor for our partner, The New York Times, and Charlie Herman, Economics Editor for The Takeaway and WNYC. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.